This piece was brought to you by Roberta's, robertaspizza.com.
Have you ever wanted to open a restaurant, launch your own food brand, or dive into the ever-changing world of food media? Well, buckle up. Join us for Aspiration to Action, a special live podcast on Monday, June 3rd at Haven's Kitchen in Manhattan. Zara Tangora and Bretton Scott, hosts of Life's a Banquet, will lead us through tales of the good, the bad, and the transformative. Featuring food world innovators and HRN hosts, Dana Cowan, host of Speaking Broadly, Eli Sussman, host of The Line, along with his brother Max, and Allison Kane, host of In the Sauce, in conversation with Jenny Britton Bauer. Light refreshments will be provided by Paris Gourmet, Wolfer Estate Vineyard, and Tahani. Get your tickets before they sell out by going to heritageradionetwork.org/action.
Welcome to HRN Happy Hour. It's 5 o'clock somewhere, and somewhere is Bushwick. I'm Kat Johnson, the host of HRN Happy Hour, here with my co-host of the day, Hannah Forden, our program manager.
Not Katie Mosman-Wadler.
Take that, Katie.
Take it. We miss her, actually. She is in Los Angeles. Hi, Katie. I hope you're enjoying the sunshine.
What's that?
I don't know. It is a very, very gray, chilly Thursday. I don't know how I'm supposed to work on my tan in this weather. Mm-mm. I want my money back. But luckily, there are a lot of really delicious things that we can sip on in the studio right now.
We are in luck. We have some like lemony treats we're going to get to in just a second. Quick shout out to our engineer, Amanda Wang. Hello, Amanda.
Happy Thursday.
Happy Thursday. We also have a new team member to introduce you to. Oscar Belkin-Sessler is our latest intern on the HRN intern team, and he'll be here through the summer.
Howdy, folks.
He is a Brooklyn native, but he is in school in the school year in Colorado. So we're happy to have him back in his sort of hometown. You're doing sort of.
Thrilled to be here.
Our special guest of the day is Doug Kaplan of Back Bay Roasters in Boston. Hello, Doug.
Hey, guys. So happy to be here.
Thanks for coming.
We're going to taste through some of your beverages that you brought, and we're very excited. They have lovely blue packaging, and we also have some cocktails mixed up by the one and only Serena Appel.
Thank you very much. I'm so happy to bring them to you.
You're not getting away with not being on the radio.
Here I am.
Okay, so first things first, before we get into our coffee talk, is we have some announcements.
That was such a good Brooklyn accent. I'm so proud of you.
Coffee.
Thanks.
Coffee.
Thanks.
Okay, so you may have heard my dulcet tones in the ad before this show, but we have a super, super, super fabulous event coming up on Monday, and there are still tickets left, so I just don't know what you're waiting for. The title of the event is Aspiration to Action, and if you've ever wanted to launch your own food business, whether it's media, whether it's packaged goods, open a restaurant, we have assembled a group of industry veterans who are also HRN hosts, and they're all brilliant. It's going to be amazing. There's going to be a lot of surprises during the evening. There is going to be rosé to sip on and cider to sip on from our friends at Wolfer. There's going to be a gorgeous smoked salmon spread from Paris Gourmet. And all of us are going to be there, and a lot of brilliant people. So please, please, please join us. It's going to be fabulous. The venue is Haven's Kitchen in Chelsea in Manhattan, which, if you haven't been there, is a beautiful cafe and cooking school owned by our very own Allie Kane. You don't want to miss this. So go to heritageradionetwork.org/action to purchase tickets while they last.
Yes. One more announcement we have for an out-of-town event that we're going to be going to for the third year in a row. It is the International Symposium on Bread. Yes.
I love bread.
Who doesn't? So it's going to be June 12th through 14th. That's a Wednesday through a Friday at Johnson & Wales University in Charlotte, North Carolina. Unlike the past 2 years where it's been really more of like a program of discussions and talks, this one's going to be more hands-on this year. So there's going to be 2 days full of workshops and start kicking off with a keynote speech on Wednesday the 12th. So there are still some tickets for that left. If you are a baker, restaurant owner, bread aficionado, enthusiast, this is the place you want to be. There's going to be Glenn Roberts talking about Heritage Grains. There's going to be Peter Reinhardt, who organizes it, talking about, I mean, he's just like one of the best bakers in the country. So it's not to be missed. And you can go find more information at Eventbrite. Just search for the International Symposium on Bread. Cool.
If they don't make their slogan, "Let's get this bread," I feel like that's a missed opportunity.
We'll
get
pass
this
along
bread.
The message. Yeah, for sure. Maybe next year.
I'm super, super excited. And there's going to be lots of bread to eat. And I learned about one of the coolest things ever at the first iteration of the symposium. There is a sourdough library in, I believe it's
in Belgium.
Belgium. Yeah. And like, who knew that that existed? Mm-hmm. They literally have sourdough starters from all across the world. Some are like decades, if not centuries, old. And it's just the coolest thing ever.
And through that, I nerded out and did a summary story about this library from Meat and Three, which you should check out. I don't remember what the theme of the episode was, but
just search for
sourdough. Search for sourdough. But you can kind of trace the path of human migration through
so cool.
commonalities in these sourdoughs. So you can see, like, you know, similarities between sourdough in Europe and sourdough in Canada because somebody's grandma brought it over
in the gold rush.
Yeah, it's super, super cool. So being a bread nerd is pretty much the coolest thing ever.
You heard it here first and last. Okay, now we have a few headlines to share. Is it me first? It is me first. Okay, so first up, this is an episode I'm super excited about. You may have heard of the restaurant The Gray. It is built in what used to be a Greyhound bus station in Savannah, Georgia, during the segregation era. It's now one of the most critically acclaimed restaurants in the country, helmed by Mashama Bailey. She sat down with Portia Wilson, host of Hungry Society, along with Jono Morisano, who is her business partner. And they talked about the pressures and joys of running The Gray and their newest venture, The Gray Market, and what a business partnership between a black chef and a white co-founder looks and really is like on a day-to-day basis.
Mashama Bailey is the coolest
the goat.
Person ever. So
yeah.
Definitely listen to that. And if you're interested in vegan eating and baking, check out episode 82 of Why Food. Jenny and Ethan sat down with Brooklyn-based food writer and recipe developer and just super stylish
and
dresser.
And Twitter superstar.
And Twitter queen. Overall, great person, Alicia Kennedy, to discuss her work and the tension between veganism, accessibility, and consumption, eating insects, and why she's not a fan of Impossible Burgers, hot take, Earth Balance, and other vegan food trends. So that is one you don't want to miss.
If you want to follow someone who's like thoughtful about talking about veganism, she's the person to follow. Alicia Kennedy. Look her up on Twitter. Okay, next up. Have you ever marveled at the delicately complex beauty of a plate of Japanese food? A dish is considered well harmonized in Japan when it is peaceful to look at. But where does that come from? In episode 329 of A Taste of the Past, Linda Palacio is joined by Elizabeth Ando, who has been on Japan Eats a number of times. So if you like this interview, go check her out on Japan Eats. She's an authority on Japanese food and culture, and they discuss the art and philosophy behind the Japanese tradition of, quote, eating with your eyes.
And I believe Elizabeth Ando is also a Heritage Radio Network Hall of Fame honoree. So
yes.
She's just an all-around VIP, so you should listen to everything she's ever done. And Dana Cowan recently traveled to Japan on the subject to record three very special episodes of HRN on tour. She had the opportunity to taste regional springtime cuisine, including a blowfish dish, shabu shabu beaver, which I would love to learn more about what that means, and shojin style cooking at a Zen monastery. So don't run, but walk. Nope, don't walk, but run.
However you get
I'm
there
tired.
Is fine.
Just slide over to our feed and check out episode 246, 247, and 248 of HRN on tour to follow along Dana's journey through Japan. There's also some great pictures on our social media if you want to live vicariously.
Yeah, she went to some places that I don't think are on the normal like tourist track. She was in like very rural areas. So if you want to get like a peek into Japan beyond Tokyo and Kyoto, I think that's a good starting point.
Yeah. Pretty much when in doubt, do whatever Dana Cowan is doing.
If you can.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I would.
All right. So those are our headlines. Make sure you check out all 35 of our weekly shows. We have some new shows as of about 3 weeks ago. So make sure you're following Natural Disasters, which is our new natural wine show, opening soon with Jenny and Alex of Till It. They're walking you through the steps of opening your own restaurant with new interviews every week, tackling a new subject. And then what am I forgetting?
Bushwick Podcast.
Yes.
Which is amazing. It's about our home borough of Bushwick, hosted by Luke Griffin, who is just a fabulous human being. And he profiles different people within the Bushwick community. So whether they're business owners or political leaders, it's a really, really beautiful mode of storytelling. And it'll invite you into our home, Bushwick.
And I like that this week his topic of the podcast is garbage, which, as we know in New York, this is the time of year when garbage really starts to become a problem. So check that out. You've learned something new. Maybe disgusting, but probably helpful to your life. And then we have another new show coming out in just a couple weeks called Queer the Table, which is going to be talking about the joyful, messy, radical magic of LGBTQ plus food. So we're super stoked about that show.
Our lineup is incredible.
Growing and changing in awesome ways. All right, so back to our guest of honor, Doug. Doug, tell us, you have an interesting journey to opening starting a coffee business.
Correct.
What were you doing before, and what led you to get into the world of coffee roasting?
It's a great question. It's definitely an interesting path into it. We launched an innovative food startup up in Boston called Leanbox, which delivers fresh, healthy food to corporate offices around the Boston area, from Maine down to Connecticut. And we were getting a ton of requests for different services added on to the office, most notably coffee. And so we made the jump and the big decision to build out our own large-scale coffee roastery and cold brew coffee brewery. This is about two years ago, right, when cold brew was kind of becoming like a big thing. It already was here in New York, but still making its way up to Boston. And because the response was so positive in offices to the cold brew coffee that we made, we decided to roll it out into grocery with a CPG product.
What was it about coffee when you're coming at it of a perspective from like a food delivery service? Why was coffee kind of like a big jump to take and a different sort of area to venture into?
Another great question. So I don't know how much you know about the office coffee scene, but a lot of
do
it...
Do tell.
I'm going to dive deep into it right
Let's
now.
Let's go.
Let's nerd out on office coffee. So office coffee, a lot of companies essentially are buying coffee equipment, buying roasted coffee from a roaster, repackaging that together, and then selling it to offices and delivering it, you know, a pretty steep markup. Yeah. We wanted to buck that trend by doing everything in-house. So we already had the distribution chain in place because we were already in these offices 3 days a week. So it was not going to be any sort of added distribution cost or delivery cost for us. And so we could capture the whole margin and deliver a really high quality fresh product at a much, you know, more reasonable price point than some of the other guys were charging.
And why is there such a high markup specifically with like office coffee? That's kind of surprising to me.
It is surprising.
Because it's bulk, right? It's a form of bulk coffee.
A lot of offices are on like K-cups.
Oh, okay.
Which is actually like surprisingly expensive if you do the math. It's like 50 cents a cup to a dollar a cup, which...
It's a lot of waste.
And a lot of waste.
Yeah. They've tried to come up with different ways to make it biodegradable or recyclable, whatever it may be. I don't think they're fully there yet. So kind of when we were thinking about it, we were looking at other price points and, you know, people are marketing up because they're buying it at a premium from some of these larger roasters. And then they need to make their typical margins that they're, you know, charging to the offices and the other items that they're delivering. So to maintain them, you know, they needed to charge a higher price point. Whereas because we're already there, we are able to be much more competitive.
And so then what was the transition like from just simply kind of doing that market in the offices? How did you transition that into more consumer focused and moving into grocery stores?
It was definitely a big change and a big transition. None of us had a background in, you know, traditional CPG products or even like food service for that matter. So it was a lot of learning on our end, a lot of kind of just like outreach and figuring out and, you know, figuring things out as we go. We like to use the term, you know, building the plane mid-flight. It was kind of like that. We like to hustle. We're kind of relentless in our outreach and that's kind of how it all came together.
Oscar, do you have a question?
Yeah, what's CPG? I'm just sure other people don't know what that is either.
I know, it's a super industry term. My bad. It's consumer packaged goods.
Okay.
So like anything that you can buy in a grocery store, pretty much.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So like what we're looking at on the table right now, these are plastic bottles of cold brew. These would be like CPG. And so on that note, let's talk about like what's in front of us on the table.
Kudo points to Oscar, the intern, for a great question.
A+.
He passes.
He's actually going to grab the box that we had brought to the bar.
Oh, great.
So he's grabbing the box right now. Yeah,
oh.
Here we go. So we wanted to show
you. Is that Franzia?
Boxed coffee.
No, it's coffee.
It's a beautiful box.
Yeah, I really love your packaging. It's so elegant.
Can I appreciate
that. Talk to us about what your inspiration was?
Well, I'm glad that you brought that up, Hannah, because that's another big differentiator with us. When we were launching our company, you know, we were big fans of a lot of the different cold brew companies out there, but we felt that they weren't super approachable from a consumer standpoint. A lot of them use very dark branding, mm-hmm. Like hipster branding and logos and words, and that wasn't really approachable to us. And so we wanted to create a product that was, you know, much more approachable to your mainstream consumer. We were almost a little bit intimidated by the specialty third wave of coffee. Mm-hmm. And so we went to the drawing board for what we wanted our brand to look like. We wanted to have a little bit more fun with it, use some light colors, like pastel colors, use some names from, we're up in Boston. So we wanted to use some names that resonate up in Boston.
What are some of the names? I love the names.
So Beacon Black. If you're not from Boston, Beacon Street is a street that goes all the way through Back Bay, which is right where our office is. The Commonwealth is, kind of an homage to Massachusetts, which is the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. And then the Harborside is actually, from downtown Boston, the Harborside.
And it's T.
That's T, yeah.
Is there any sort of connection between, like, the Tea Party and the harbor and the name? Or am I stretching that too far?
You're stretching a little bit far.
Okay.
We thought about calling it the Boston Tea Party, but we're not dads yet, so we can't make dad jokes like that.
We're big fans of dad jokes on this show.
I made one a little earlier.
Keep them coming.
Yeah.
Well, okay. Well, maybe. So we have some cocktails too.
Yes.
So maybe that's the tea party.
I like that.
There you go.
Well, up in Boston, we call it a patty.
A pot.
We're having a teapot.
Coffee talk and teapot.
Yeah.
Tell us about the cocktails.
So these cocktails, obviously a lot of late night work goes into building a company. And what better time to do research than, after 5 p.m. So that's kind of where these cocktails that we came up with came out of. We have our Harbor Palmer, which is our Harborside mixed with vodka and fresh lemon juice, which is very tasty and refreshing. I wish we had some sunshine to enjoy it.
It's almost tricking me into thinking it's sunny out because it's such a bright, tasty drink.
And I've heard that it could potentially make you a little tan if you drink it.
Huh.
Get out of here.
Yeah. I think you should take a sip. And then this is our Marlboro Street Martini,
let me try that.
This is a little bit of a different recipe because we didn't have Kahlua on hand. What's the recipe again?
This is the Beacon Black with banana liqueur.
That's so
and
good.
A macadamia nut syrup.
Divine.
Wow.
I want to make like an affogato with this. It's so good.
Ooh. That's a good idea.
Just want to say for my fellow banana haters, this is delicious.
I also am not a huge banana fan, but yeah, this is really, really good.
That's a bold statement, banana hating.
Had to say it.
I thought banana is like a staple of every diet.
Texture.
Yeah.
Take another taste.
Yeah, so what do you guys like all the drinks?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Excellent.
And they all feel like really good, like, summery drinks. Like, they're lighter cocktails. You could sip on a few of them. It has coffee and tea in it, so it's going to make you not feel sluggish.
It's perfect for day drinking because you get a little up and you get a little buzz.
You just stay even keeled.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
That's what we're really all about as a company, too. We just were this past weekend on Nantucket for Fagawi, which, if you don't know, is a large boat race from Hyannis on Cape Cod to Nantucket.
What kind of boats are we talking? Sailboats?
Sailboats, yeah.
Cool.
It wouldn't be very...
That's
I guess
New
it could
England.
Be interesting if they had, like, motorboats, but... It's a little bit more exciting when it's
But like bigger sailboats, not like a regatta type of boat, right?
No, like big sailboats. Yeah, with like 10-person squads.
That's cool.
So fun.
Yeah, and it was awesome. We got a really positive response to all of our products. We gave away over 2,000 bottles. We gave away a bunch of scrunchies, which are back in. I've heard.
You are so on trend, and I'm very impressed.
Yes.
Wow.
I should have brought some, but we literally gave them
away.
Can
you please get us some scrunchies?
We'll send you some.
Scrunchies are my summer style. Yeah.
My hair's just long enough now that I can actually rock a scrunchie. All right,
scrunchies We're coming ready. To HRN.
We will be repping you all summer.
It's so on point. Ginny's from Ginny's Ice Cream, she just did a scrunchie collaboration.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's the real thing. I'm impressed.
And then, so we're all about, you know, living the lifestyle, getting out to the beach in the summer, going up to the mountains, hiking or skiing or whatever it may be. We, you know, designed our products to get out, so... We have a bunch of different grab-and-go products in the single-serve format that you can throw in your bag for your day trip. Mm-hmm. We also have our refrigerator-ready tap box, which we can talk more about, which is essentially, if you're at your apartment in the city, a week's worth of coffee. If you're going away for the weekend to a ski cabin, you know, it's perfect for your whole group, your whole family up in the mountains.
So I want to back up a little bit and talk a little bit more about chronology of kind of how you ended up with Cold Brew, because you also do sell... like roasted whole beans.
Correct. Yeah.
Was that what came first, or did you know that Cold Brew was going to be kind of like the flagship product?
We knew that Cold Brew was going to be the flagship product because the roasted coffee market is just so saturated. Mm-hmm. There's so many companies that are doing it, and we thought that we could really differentiate ourselves with Cold Brew.
Awesome. And so then, with that, what are some of the challenges involved with cold brew production that you don't have with just the beans? Because you just put not to oversimplify, but like the beans just go straight into the bag and just go to the consumer. But cold brew is a whole other process.
So one of the reasons also, just to kind of bring it back to the last point about why we decided on cold brew, is that not a lot of people actually brew cold brew.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of co-packing that happens, which is where, you know, other people are making products. And we saw a big opportunity to vertically integrate and, you know, be a provider that did everything from source green coffee direct from farms around the world to import them into the States, roast, brew, package all under one roof. And that way kind of create the highest quality product that we could possibly make, because we have full chain of command over the product its entire life.
Wow, that's really impressive.
Yeah. And the cold brewing is a very different skill set than roasting.
Mm-hmm.
It takes a lot more time, and because of that you need to be very precise. It's typically anywhere from an 18 to 24 hour brew, so there's not really, if you mess something up in the brew, then you kind of have to start all over, which really sucks. So we've done a lot of research in cold brewing. If you walk through our facility, it looks very similar to any sort of craft beer brewery. Which is kind of funny, because we're actually competing with them for tanks.
Really?
And it's like the highly competitive, seconds market for used beer tanks.
Oh, so you brew the cold brew in a huge, I don't know what those
mash tun. Yep.
In a mash tun.
Yeah.
So you're using equipment that is built for breweries.
Exactly.
And like repurposing it.
Correct.
Do you think there's a marketplace for someone to make equipment that is more suited to cold brewing, or like you totally content using the mash tuns?
So there's been some guys that are, you know, trying to make pushes in that space. We found that the beer equipment works really well for cold brewing, and allows us to brew a ton of coffee. So right now we're brewing about 10,000 gallons a day, which is a ton of coffee. It's a little bit different than beer brewing, because in beer brewing, as you guys know, there's a fermentation process, and then lagering. It takes a lot longer. Whereas as soon as our product is done, it needs to go into some sort of packaging. You can't just like let it sit and hang out. Otherwise, things like bacteria will grow or mold or whatever. And so because of that, our capacity is quite big with not like a massive Budweiser type brewery.
Right. Okay. But that makes me think of something. So there's obviously, you know, there's kombucha, there's fermented tea. And I don't know if you've ever thought about doing that, but what about like, are there any sort of like fermentations you could do with coffee? Have you experimented with
that? I've not experimented with it. I may have drinking fermented coffee by accident.
And was it good?
It was not good.
Okay, well, that answers that question.
No, I think there are people that are trying to do some sort of like kombucha coffee
interesting.
Hybrid.
I've never thought about that until you just said it.
It doesn't sound super appealing to me. Yeah. That being said, I'm a big fan of kombucha, and we love, you know, one of our products is tea, and we love that space and have gotten a really good response on our Harborside. And we were out as a team in California in the spring and ran into something called hard kombucha.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They've had that on tap here before.
Oh, Alberta's. Really?
Yeah.
There's a company out there called Juneshine that we're big fans of.
Isn't and it called Kombrucha?
Yeah, Kombrucha.
Yeah, they're the East Coast guys.
Yep. It.
Funny name.
I know, right?
Yeah, dad joke name. And so, yeah, I think, you know, we're interested in exploring the tea space and the kombucha space.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Let's take a really quick break. We'll come back. We'll talk more about the cold brew and Boston and all the good things. So we'll be right back.
Are you enjoying this podcast? Heritage Radio Network has plenty more. My name is Korsha Wilson, and I'm the host of A Hungry Society here on HRN. A Hungry Society focuses on highlighting dope people doing amazing work in food, and we talk about how we can make the culinary world a more diverse and inclusive space. You can join the conversation by checking out A Hungry Society wherever you listen to podcasts and on heritageradionetwork.org.
My name is Brandon Hoy, co-owner of Roberta's, a super duper awesome place. Roberta's is a very, 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 very proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. We're also super awesome. Thank you, Heritage.
Thank you, Roberta's. We are back with Doug Kaplan of Back Bay Roasters. Is that's the right name, Back Bay Roasters. I keep wanting to say coffee.
That's the name, Back Bay Roasters.
Got it.
We make a lot of coffee. Cocktails.
Yeah. We've had cocktails and coffee, and we're just all over the place.
Well, Hannah said she skipped her afternoon coffee for us, which is...
She did.
I was saving myself.
Yeah, I like that a lot.
Can we talk a little bit about sourcing, like how you source your beans and kind of like how challenging that is? It's obviously you have to go beyond the borders of our country to find the beans you're going to roast.
Yes. So coffee is... you know, grown all over the world. So like you were saying, we need to go all over the earth to source it. It's grown in a very specific region in terms of altitude and geography. And we have a sourcing team that goes direct to the farms and develops relationships with the farms that we work with. So the beans that are in the cold brews that we're drinking right now are actually from Guatemala, Rwanda, and Brazil. And some have, you know, some of the farms have an interesting story. Like Guatemala is a really cool way that we were introduced to the farm. On the lean box side of our business, the VP of operations was going to Babson Business School. Randomly, someone in his class, his family owned several different farms in Guatemala that grew coffee, and they didn't really do anything with them, and they were looking for a way to get them into the States and into, you know, production. And so we helped him by, you know, bringing his coffees into the States, and now he's growing his business too, and we're using his awesome coffees in our cold brew. Nice. It's a big piece of our cold brew.
I'm curious, are there certain varieties of coffee or certain regions or certain characteristics that you look for cold brew versus traditionally brewed coffee? Because I know like the flavor profile is a little bit different and the way the temperature interacts. So what are you looking for cold brew?
Yeah, so with our cold brew, we always go for a little bit more of like a chocolatier finish, which is why we use the beans from the countries that I mentioned. Yeah, some of the African coffees, like your Ethiopians, your Kenyas, give a little bit more fruitiness and acidity in both the hot coffee and the cold brew coffee, which, you know, on certain days is awesome. But we really wanted to create more of like a sessionable cold brew, to use like the beer term, like a cold brew.
It's a good term.
Yeah. I think Sam Adams calls it like crushable.
Mm-hmm. We like the term crushable too.
Yeah.
We're contemplating having an event called Crushable.
You definitely
stay
should.
Stay tuned.
We'll call you.
Well, again,
for the coffee component.
I hope so. So that's kind of what we are going for. So a lot of research has gone into the products that we make, and you know, honing in on the exact flavor palette that we want. And then, you know, the base of the Commonwealth, which is our vanilla latte, is a little bit different. We actually use a pretty strong concentrate to make that, which is you know, brewed totally cold again. And then we, you know, dilute it with milk and then give some nice vanilla flavoring into it. One of the big differentiators with our whole process and our whole company is that everything that we do is entirely cold chain. So from the moment that it starts brewing to the moment that you crack open a bottle or our tap box and pour out your glass, it's been cold its whole life. So we like to say that we're the only, you know, one of the only true cold brew coffee companies in the U.S. because unlike a lot of other coffee companies that have recently gone shelf stable, which is, you know, heating a product to 200 plus degrees for several seconds, which really kills a lot of the flavor in the product, which is why guys mask it with a lot of sugar, a lot of dairy, a lot of flavor, because it gives off a really burnt taste with coffee. We use high pressure processing, which is a totally cold chain of extending our shelf life without introducing any heat. I know I'm getting a little nerdy here.
But no, we love it.
I love this part of it. Because yeah. That's unique. And beyond just like flavor, why is that so important to like the coffee process itself?
We like to say it's brewed the hard way, not to steal from Budweiser again, but it's, you know, distribution is really challenging, especially cold chain distribution. But we felt that the product just takes such a quality hit when you're heating it like that, that it wasn't worth it to go down that path. And, you know, furthermore, especially with a fresh product, we just felt like we were giving our consumers the best possible product in the market, which is, at the end of the day, what we wanted to do. And we wanted to manage that whole process.
Well, talk to us a little bit about the two very beautiful boxes that we received in our office today. So yes, we were lucky enough to get our own shipment of Back Bay coffee to our office. So now we have a stash ready. So we'll be much more alert this coming week. But it came cold. It came refrigerated. So talk to us about that and like what your process is like for making sure that it stays cold until it reaches the consumer's hands.
So that's a very tricky piece of the business. And it's taken a while to figure out. It's a lot of companies went shelf stable because it's very easy to ship things without refrigeration. You know, anyone can do that.
Yeah.
We had to figure out a network with a local company who manages, they actually are in a very interesting business. They do a lot of third party fulfillment for candy companies, which is all, heat sensitive because chocolate and candies can melt. So I didn't even realize that they were shipped cold. And so we started a partnership with them, and they have a full food safety and QA team in-house that helped us design dry ice packaging to be able to ship cold.
And then do you actually handle the shipping like out of your facilities, or do they handle the packaging and distribution?
That's another benefit, is that they handle that nice packing.
That's so lovely.
Yeah, which, you know, as you scale up, it has become... Originally, we were fulfilling in-house, but there's a reason why there's third-party fulfillment centers, because... there's a lot of infrastructure that goes into that.
Totally. And then can people anywhere in the U.S. get your coffee, your cold brew shipped to them?
So right now we're just within a 2-day shipping radius of Boston. So it goes out to Chicago, all the way down to South Carolina, all the way southwest to Tennessee. Mm-hmm. And then we'll quickly be expanding in the fall to cover about 98% of the country with 2-day shipping.
Nice.
Yeah. Awesome. Which is great. And the bag and box, which we call our refrigerator ready tap box, is perfect for, you know, home delivery or office delivery, because it is just such an effective and you know, great way to serve cold brew in that format.
So if I was someone who last summer was trying to just like make cold brew in my French press, which works okay.
Yeah, I've been there, done that.
But the downside, unless you have two French presses, is like you really only can do the brew for like, you know, 12 hours. Cause I'm not remembering to do it in the morning. I'm doing it like the night before, and it's okay. So why is it like a better option to go with one of these boxes than to try to make your own cold brew to keep in your refrigerator?
It just never tastes the same.
It never tastes the same.
That's so one reason. Times. Yes.
Yeah. There's a lot of reasons. So, like you're saying, cold brew or even iced coffee for that matter at the home is quite the hassle.
Yeah.
With cold brew, you know, grinds are getting everywhere. You got to figure out a way to filter it. You were using your French press, which is a somewhat effective method, but
it's okay.
There's no way to like agitate it while it's brewing, or right. There's no real quality control. The other thing is that, you know, you're still paying a lot for the coffee. And so we've developed this refrigerator tap box to be know, make you basically like cost neutral.
Yeah.
So if you buy this online, it's right now at $15.99 if you buy a single unit, but you can actually subscribe and save and get it at $14 a unit.
Oh, wow. And how many like servings is that?
It's roughly 17 servings. So wow. It's 101 ounces of fresh, true, like never heated cold brew coffee.
And when you order online, can you just get one box at a time, or could you like buy two at a time?
So you can just get one at a time, but the subscribe and save allows you to get multiple boxes at a time. Cool. We get 120 day shelf life on this product, so you can
even after you open it, or
yeah, it's good for the full shelf life.
Wow.
And the cool thing about it is, you know, it fits right in your refrigerator. It's got a nice little spigot, so you don't even need to deal with any sort of brewing, any sort of, you know, opening up bottles is really challenging sometimes. So this gives you the ability just to pour right off. It gives you kind of like draft cold brew right in your house.
This has really become a problem-solving session for me because I'm going to stop my regular coffee subscription. Shout out to Counterculture, who I also love.
That's for the colder months, though.
But like, I'm going to pause it. I'm doing this for the summer. So sold.
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 Can we hire you as a spokesperson?
Absolutely.
Literally.
If I get paid in coffee, I'm happy.
Coffee.
What else? We've talked about sourcing to production to shipping, how you get it.
Yeah, how about where people can get it, like, in person?
Let's do it.
So we have a very exciting spring and summer season. We launched with Stop and Shop.
Stop and Shop.
You scared me there for a second. We launched with Stop and Shop, and we're launching with ShopRite in the next couple of weeks, which is incredibly exciting for us. Now people can actually go to the stores and buy our products off the shelves, which is an unbelievable experience. I was telling a story a couple weeks ago, the first time that I actually went and bought the cold brew for myself. It was a little bit of a tear came to my eye, just because so much hard work has gone into these products and honing them and you know, building the facility out, creating the branding, creating the relationships that allowed us to get the product out on the shelves, and then finally, you know, supporting it and getting it onto the shelves. And so we couldn't be more thrilled to have our products available for consumers to buy both in store and online. We think it's important to support our, you know, retailers that have actual stores as well, which is why we're doing a lot of work with Stop and Shop. We're going to be doing samplings at their stores throughout the summer, same with ShopRite, and then targeted to launch at a bunch of different retailers this fall as well.
Nice.
Amazing. I had a question and now I forgot it. Any other questions? Thoughts, concerns. Oscar, what do you think about the cold brew?
Oh, I love it. I'm really enjoying it. I'm new to the coffee game, I must admit. I really started drinking coffee earlier this year. But within that time, I've attempted to make iced coffee and failed.
Fail.
Right. This is perfect for me. Where can I get it in New York?
We have Stop and Shops here.
We do?
We got Stop and Shops here.
Yeah, there's one by Atlantic Mall.
There we go.
Yep. We just launched a pilot in a couple of stores with Just Salad in Manhattan.
Yeah. Nice.
You can find the stores that we're in online. We're really excited to be partnering with them. Their restaurants are awesome. They get a ton of people. And so we're really excited to be partnering with them. When you were saying that you're a new coffee drinker, it actually made me think. The other beauty of this, not to sound like a snake oil salesman, but the other beauty of this tap box is that the reason that we only have it in black cold brew coffee is because every one of us, you know, drinks coffee differently.
Yeah.
Whether you like with oat milk, soy milk, almond milk, hemp milk, whatever. We could name 20 milks. Regular dairy. This gives you the ability to make it exactly how you want it.
Yeah.
So you don't have to really, you know, it takes the guesswork out of it. Mm-hmm. You can make it if you want oat milk with a little bit of sugar over ice. It gives you the ability and the flexibility to do that.
Everybody can be happy.
Totally. And I have to say, for the Commonwealth, which is your vanilla latte version, like I am a classic New Yorker. I like my coffee regular, milk and two sugars, but I don't usually go for flavor, but it's very subtle and nice. Yeah. So I'm curious, like, how do you get that non-artificial flavor? Because it's really good.
Well, it starts off with really high quality cold brew coffee.
Well, I mean, of course.
And then when we looked at developing our single serve products, most people don't drink black coffee like we were talking about. Yeah. So we wanted to develop different products in the single serve format that people could just grab and drink on the go, which is the whole purpose of a single serve product, right? You're not going to take a black cold brew coffee and then pour a little bit out, pour milk into it, and then put ice in your bottle. It just doesn't make sense. Mm-hmm. So we wanted to develop kind of the adult version of the you know, standard like single serve products. So the Frappuccinos of the world in the bottle have so much sugar. Oh, yeah. It's insane. And so when we developed the Commonwealth, we wanted to start off with a really high quality cold brew coffee concentrate, dilute it down with some natural milk, and then just sweeten it with a little bit of pure cane sugar and some natural vanilla flavoring. And then the Harbor Side is kind of a similar, if you look at the nutritional panel, there's not a lot of sugar in it. Mm-hmm. It's really just cold brew black tea with fresh lemon juice and a tiny, tiny bit of pure cane sugar as well. So not in your face. We were actually looking at one of the big guys' raspberry teas the other day, and it had literally over 30 grams of sugar serving, which is crazy. And it was a tea that I used to drink a lot as a high schooler.
I'm sure your teeth are not happy with you for that.
At that point, you're like, is it even really tea?
Exactly, right. Yeah. Like, because we're starting off with such a high-quality cold brew tea, there's no need to mask it with flavoring and sugar and make it taste fake.
Yeah.
And that's the nice thing about cold brew coffee, too, is it doesn't get the same bitterness, too. So, like, I'm usually a bit of a wimp, but the black cold brew is totally pleasant because it doesn't have as much of a like bitter bite to it.
Yeah.
I remember what my question was. It was, I'm enjoying the cocktail so much that is there anywhere to get these recipes or like cocktail inspiration for the cold brew products?
We just launched a new website recently geared towards e-commerce, which is a big, you know, exciting launch for us. We're going to be adding those different recipes onto the site for both cocktails and mocktails.
Amazing.
Yeah.
I highly recommend that for summer because these are just, like Hannah said, perfect day drinking.
Crushable.
Delightful.
Crushable.
Delightful.
Love it.
Delightfully crushable.
There we go. Okay. Well, it's the time of our show now where we challenge our guests and friends to trivia.
Let's go.
Oscar has helped write the trivia for the week, and the theme is delivery, because you have a background in food delivery.
Oscar's been sitting here the whole time and did not tell me about trivia.
Yeah.
We like to...
I'm just kind of getting a gauge on you, and I wanted to test you.
Yeah.
What did you really do in the delivery business?
Yeah, exactly.
we shall see.
I haven't seen the questions. Serena hasn't seen the questions, so you can absolutely phone a friend if you are miffed. So let's see.
And Amanda's seen the questions because she's going to be doing our wrong buzzer.
Oh my God, there's a sound.
Yeah, no pressure. Yeah.
No worries. All right, question number one. Which of the two big name app-based food delivery services are actually owned by the same parent company? The options are Uber Eats, Seamless, Grubhub, Postmates, and Caviar.
That's an easy one. Seamless and Grubhub.
Correct.
Here.
All right, question number two.
I order a lot of food.
you were just mentioning that you like looked at Grubhub when you were in Jacksonville, Florida.
Exactly.
So yeah, you're ready for that. Okay, question number two. The history of delivered food can be traced back to the late 18th century. In what country could you order a bowl of nyangmung or cold noodle soup way back in 1768?
This isn't multiple choice.
No.
China.
No, you're close, though.
Japan?
No.
Korea?
Correct. Correct. Wait,
we're giving the correct sound on his third guess.
Hey,
yeah, Amanda, you gotta get that buzzer in.
Yeah, Amanda, don't be so nice.
All right, question number three. In 1994, the first ever online pizza purchase was made on which restaurant's website?
What's the year again?
1994.
Don't overthink it.
Sparrow?
No.
Oh, Domino's?
No.
Papa John's?
No.
Pizza Hut.
Pizza Hut. Oh my gosh. There was one right near my house growing up. I can't believe I forgot that.
I love Pizza Hut so much, especially when they close and the buildings become something else and you can still tell it was a Pizza Hut.
Oh yeah. The distinct look.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I love
it. It's like an auto loan office and you're like, that definitely was a Pizza Hut.
It's the place where I want to get an auto loan. Still smells a little bit like pizza.
Oh. Man, I really miss the pizza. We've also been having a lot of Pizza Hut trivia lately.
We really have.
We did some kale trivia. Here's a tangent question for you. Do you know, well, I gave you the answer, but did you know that before like the big
pizza
kale craze?
How did you know?
Before the big kale craze, when everyone started eating it, Pizza Hut was like the number one purchaser of kale in the U.S. because they would use it to decorate their salad bars.
No way. I never put together that was kale.
It was kale.
That was before kale had a name.
Take that, Goop.
They were like,
it was garnish.
This is far too tough and sour for anyone.
But someone's like, should we massage it? Oh, that's great.
Should we saute it?
Bake it?
Yeah.
Kale chip?
Put it on the pizza. Okay, question number four. Uber Eats is rumored to be eyeing 2021 as the year it will expand its delivery logistics to include what new technology?
Drones?
Yes! You're killing it.
Wow. I was going to say self-driving cars.
That's
probably going to happen sooner.
Drones
2030.
Are just...
Sub-question here. And what is the primary concern with that coming out of cities?
That people will jump up and grab food out of the sky?
It's the buzzing.
Oh, the buzzing.
Oh, yeah. A lot of people are studying like noise pollution more and more, and how what a detrimental effect noise pollution has on people. And drones flying around everywhere would make that a lot worse.
And I guess we've come so accustomed to the sound of like cars and ambulances, we just don't care about that.
Yeah,
high pitch. That's it's not gonna happen.
They are very loud.
I was hoping you were gonna say smell-o-vision.
Oh, I like that.
Who even needs it delivered when you can just smell it?
Uber Eats, if you're listening.
That's what HRN will be doing in 2030. We'll have smell-a-radio.
Smell-a-radio. Smell-a-cast. Smell-o-cast. Okay, last question. We're going back in time again. In the 1960s, about 30% of milk in the U.S. was delivered by milkmen. People would either have insulated boxes on their stoops, or in some instances, they would have a double-doored box built into the side of their house. What were those contraptions called?
Ice boxes?
No.
Milkerators?
Nope.
Think kindergarten.
Cubbies!
Yes!
Cubbies!
Nice! That was kind of an apropos question for you because it's about keeping the milk cold in all steps of the chain.
I miss the old days of the milkman.
Do you know there are some like new milkman companies too?
Yeah.
There's one called Manhattan Milk. That will deliver you milk to your door.
Oh, because that's like the one thing I never remember to do.
To buy milk?
Because I buy Ronnybrook, and so I have like 7,000 glass bottles on top of my fridge. I'm like, I'm going to take these to the grocery store. Yeah. So someone would just come and do it for me. Mm-hmm.
You know what we could do? We could just take a trip to Ronnybrook, and you could take them all back by hand.
Done and done.
Who's down?
We're all going after a couple more.
Have you ever had their chocolate milk?
And their butter is so good.
Yeah.
It's so good.
Does it go well with cold brew?
Yes. You guys should do a collab.
There may or may not be a mocha coming out shortly.
Oh, what?
We won't say anything.
What?
Stays here.
Okay. Well, we're going to have to go because I have a feeling there's some extra bonus off the record treats we're going to get out of you, Doug.
Definitely.
We need some of the inside scoop. Sorry, listeners. You'll have to just wonder. We can't give you everything.
Sorry, not sorry.
Sorry, not sorry. Thanks for joining us for Coffee Talk.
No one
was better the
quite
first time.
We're just a coffee couple talk. Coffee guys.
It's Coffee Talk.
There we go.
Serena's the pro.
Serena's got it down.
All right. This has been a really fun show. Thanks to Doug Kaplan for coming from Back Bay Roasters. Thank you to Serena Appel, who is his partner in coffee crime. Is that right?
Yeah, that's the truth.
That's the official title. It's the official title. Thanks to our new team member, Oscar.
You're welcome.
Thanks for that. Thanks for those awesome questions. Keeping the flow going. Thanks to our engineer, Amanda Wang. Woo! She should be pressing the applause button for herself. And finally, thanks to Hannah Ford, our program manager, and my co-host of the day.
Thank you, Kat.
I'm Kat Johnson. This has been HRN Happy Hour / Coffee Talk. See you next week.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to learn more about our 10-year anniversary celebration happening all year long, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/Heritage Radio Network. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the food world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the heart at the top right of our homepage. Thank you for listening.